everybody. Welcome into episode number 3 of The Mount. It's me, Mike Bernier. I'm joined, as always, by my co-host, Jason Gross. We're here to talk and continue our trek through the Mount Rushmores of Major League Baseball. We're staying in the National League West. We're going to a team who somehow hung 15 runs in Korea on Yoshinobu Yamamoto earlier this morning. It is the San Diego Padres.
I unfortunately have a season-long bet on Yamamoto to win the Cy Young. Not a good start.
What were the odds that you got on that?
I don't know. It was like 7-1. It wasn't even that great.
Ew.
I didn't bet much.
I don't like that. this just feels gross.
He just comes out and gives up 5 runs in the first inning. GG.
It's funny talking to a friend of ours, Big Fat Craig. We were talking about
is BFC. Is that just what we call him here?
Yeah, we're calling BFC on the show. So literally, we were talking about Yamamoto this morning, and I said his fastball in the clips that I've watched, it was really flat tonight or this morning coming out of his hand. When that's got no run on it, it's like throwing 80 to a major leaguer.
Yeah,
like, dude. Cool, you throw hard. Guess what? It's flat as fuck. You know, they kind of get paid to hit flat shit.
I didn't get to watch it, unfortunately, but I just saw the result. It was a little too early for me this morning. He was run before I even woke up, I think.
He didn't make it out the first, so.
Yeah.
Or he made it out of the first beat. He was pulled after one. And then I was talking to Craig. I said, I think I'm more worried about how dangerous the fucking Dodgers are. Their starter gives up 5 runs and they still hang 11. And it takes a Manny Machado 3-run bomb in the ninth to give the Padres the insurance runs necessary.
Yeah, I mean, they're Dodgers lineup is kind of stacked.
I would agree with that assessment. There's no automatic out on that in that lineup.
Nah, and even if you have a guy like Max Muncy hitting like 200, he's still getting on base 35% of the time.
Yeah, and when you can do that, that makes it very hard to get people out.
Yeah, they're loaded, man. It's not really fair. Yeah. However, no. I digress, because look what happened last year. Same thing.
Yeah, that's true. All right, let's get to why we're here, though. Let's talk about the San Diego Padres, Mount Rushmore. Obviously, what we'll do is we'll alternate bringing somebody to the table like we have on our first 2 shows, and then we'll wrap the show up with who we think may be able to break into this Mount Rushmore in the future. Jay, I will give you the first name to discuss.
Can we skip past Tony Gwynn and go to another one, or do you want to just roll with Tony Gwynn and talk about
him a little bit? I mean, I'll at least give us the courtesy of reading off the stats that I've combined and accumulated for Mr. Padre and the number one member of the Mount Rushmore. In 20 seasons, Tony Gwynn eclipsed a .338 batting average, a .388 on base percentage. He had 3,141 hits, 543 of which were doubles, 85 triples, 135 home runs, 319 RBIs, 1,383 runs scored, had over 790 walks, 15-time All-Star, 8-time batting champion, 5 gold gloves, and a cumulative WAR of 69.2, which leads the way in the Friars' history.
Yeah, I mean, he is, like you said, Mr. Padre. No arguing this one. Bona fide Hall of Famer. One thing I wanted to talk about was how Greg Maddux always talked highly of Tony Gwynn, and I just looked up his stats against Tony Gwynn. And against Greg Maddux, Tony Gwynn hit .429 in 103 plate appearances, never struck out. And
wild.
Maddux had over 300 strikeouts. And the thing is, like, they played in the same division for a little bit because the Braves used to be in the
West.
NL West. before the realignment. Yeah, just absurd. Even when Tony Gwynn got fat, he was still pretty good. He's still hitting three. He was still was it the strike year 94? He was like hitting like 370, or he was hitting over 400 or something at one point, and they ended the season. Is that what it was? I can't remember exactly what happened that year, but I want to say he's the closest player since
in 94, which was the strike shortened season. He hit 394 with a 454 on base percentage. He had 165 hits, which led the National League at the time. He finished seventh in the MVP vote that year.
Yeah, which who knows? Maybe he would have hit 400 if they finished the season. Obviously an upward climb there, but I know he was like the last person to like be included in that conversation was Tony Gwynn to like hit 400 for a season.
I think he still would have been in trouble trying to win the MVP race because at the time of the strike, Bagwell was hitting 368 with 39 homers, 116 RBIs, 104 runs scored, had an 8.2 WAR, had 147 hits. So I think Tony would have been an uphill battle to try to beat Bagwell for the MVP that year.
For sure. And I remember Matt Williams that year had like he had 43 home runs, and they were talking that he might break the record.
Second.
Yeah. And Bagwell's year was crazy because I'm just looking at the WAR right now.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, Greg Maddux led the league in WAR, which is insane.
Yep.
But
8.7
offensively. Bagwell's WAR was 8.2. Matt Williams was only 4.7. Tony Gwynn was at 4.2. So it's like Bagwell would have won the MVP by today's standards easily based on those stats.
He did get all first place votes, so he did win unanimously.
did they award an MVP that year?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Moises Alou finished third. I enjoy the fact that the guy who finished in 12th with 22 points in the voting system actually had a better WAR than the guy who finished in second. Shout out to Montreal's Marquise Grissom.
Marquise Grissom was thug back in the day. How is Ken Hill even involved?
And Larry Walker. There was four Expos in the top 12.
Well, this is based on voting, but Ken Hill only had that amount of votes because he had 16 wins, which like no one cares about wins anymore. He was averaging half a strikeout per inning, which is not good. So like the voting was very poorly done back then.
But if we're going to talk about how did that guy get a vote, scroll down to number 22.
Andy Bennett. Oh, no, or famous Padre.
6-14.
Yeah, but he had a 1.19 WHIP. It's not even that.
And an ERA of almost 4. Oh, it's so bad.
Yeah, we're just gonna disregard this.
Yeah.
Okay, back to
I'll let you have the first nominee that is not Tony Gwynn.
Okay. Probably another obvious one, but Trevor Hoffman.
Yeah. Yeah, that one's pretty easy. Hoffman in his time as a Padre eclipsed 16 seasons as a Friar. He had 54 wins out of the bullpen, a career ERA in San Diego of 2.76, a WHIP of 1.043, 552 saves, 1,029 strikeouts, and was a 6-time All-Star for the Friars.
Yep. Probably top five closer of all time.
I mean, I think the conversation is I think he's second after Mo.
Yeah.
You could bring Billy Wagner into the conversation if you truly wanted to, especially because he was closing from the left side, which, you know, especially later on when we went away from the traditional anybody who we trust can close to being more, oh, it's a lefty versus a lefty. Let's go that route instead. You know, Billy was really the anomaly in that regards, but I would probably still lean Hoffman. But yeah, I think,
yeah, the only
I think
thing
these two.
Go ahead. I was gonna say the only thing that sucked for Hoffman was that he was like, quote unquote, stuck in. My fingers are gone. What's up, Tony Gwynn? He was quote unquote stuck in San Diego, and they weren't a winning team. They had like one. They had the '98 season where they went to the World Series, but like for the most part, no one was like super stoked about the Padres back in the day.
There was not a lot of wandering eyes on San Diego Padre baseball.
Meanwhile, yeah, Trevor Hoffman's just accumulating like 40 saves a year and like sub three RAs and
for yeah,
10 years or so, more than 10 years.
Yeah, I would say that when you look at his time, obviously 7 playoff appearances since they become a franchise. They got to the World Series in 98 against the Yankees, got swept. You know, in his talk in San Diego, you know, he was a machine, really. You know, he started obviously in Florida, then got traded to San Diego. His ERA after that first season was never over 4. The rest of his time in San Diego, he had a 4.31 the first year, had a 3.88 in 95. Every other year was 2.75 or less, except for one, which was 0-1. 902 games. He had, let's see, what's that stand for? He finished 761 of the 902 games that he'd appeared in as a member of the Padres. Gave up 292 earned runs, 85 home runs. He had 8 hit by pitches over the course of his entire 16-year career in San Diego. Never committed a balk in his entire 19-year career. ERA plus of 146. I don't know what else you can say about this guy. Pretty good. Finished 2nd in the Cy Young Award voting twice. In 98 when they – I'm sorry. Yeah, 98 when they went to the World Series. And then in 2006, he finished in 2nd behind Brandon Webb. The year
Brandon Webb won it. I don't understand how there were years where he was not an all-star, which is kind of insane.
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now, and it's like –
he probably should have been an all-star every single year except for, like, one.
Well, the year that he finished with the, like, the 3.88 in 95. But then if you look at from there on, 96, he was 9-5, 42 saves, doesn't make the all-star team. 6-4 with 37, doesn't make the all-star game. 4-2, 53 makes it. 2-3 with 40 makes it. 4-7 with 43.
His strikeout per 9 numbers are pretty good too. It's not like his lowest
10.6, 9.8.
Yeah.
It's wild that there are years that this guy didn't make the all-star team. And I think was this before they started making them take a person from every team?
No, they started doing that a long time ago. So I'm guessing those years, like, it was probably Tony Gwynn or, like, Caminiti.
Yeah.
I mean, Tony Gwynn was probably an all-star all those years.
So the Trevor Hoffman from Florida to San Diego, that trade, he was traded with Andres Berumen and Jose Martinez for Rich Rodriguez and a power-hitting outfielder by the name of Gary Sheffield.
Oh, yeah, Sheffield was in the Hoffman trade. I forgot about that.
Yep. Obviously, what he left San Diego, signed for his final 2 years as a member of the Milwaukee Brewers, where he retired. You know, I think this guy's a slam dunk for the Padres Hall of Fame or the Padres Mount Rushmore. And I don't think there's anyone realistically that's going to knock him off this perch for some time.
His age 41 season in Milwaukee, where he just had a 1.83 ERA. Good job, 37
Trevor. 37
saves. Yep. Not as many strikeouts, but he was still throwing that changeup, getting the job
cool
done.
Cool changeup. Like.
Yeah, I remember playing with him in, like, I don't know, one of the baseball video games, and you just couldn't hit it. You couldn't hit the changeup no matter what. It just drops.
Facts.
He'd go from throwing, like, 94, and then, like, it would go to, like, 68.
94 with run to 68, and you're, like, swinging 5 minutes ahead of it.
Yeah, exactly. It looks the same. It's, like, comparable to Pedro Martinez's changeup. Probably better. But also, right. Ironically, he played for Gary Sheffield played for every team that Trevor Hoffman played for.
Really?
Florida, San Diego, and Milwaukee. That's it.
That's an interesting stat.
Yeah, random one. Just threw that off the top of my head.
All right. Obviously, I have Trevor Hoffman on there as well. Yeah. Third up for me, we talked about him when we talked about the Cy Young Award a couple episodes ago. I do have Jake Peavy on mine.
Oh, wow. Met Peavy.
92 and 68 as a Padre, 3.29 ERA, a 1.186 whip, had 1,348 strikeouts as a member of the Padres, a two-time All-Star, won the Cy Young Award. He ranks as third in WAR in Padres franchise history. A little bit more Jake's time in San Diego. He started 212 games, never made an appearance out of the bullpen, 7 complete games, 3 shutouts, threw over 1,340 innings, had a strikeout per 9 of 9, and a strikeout to walk ratio of 3.10, an ERA plus of 1.19, and faced over 5,500 batters as a member of the Padres. 19-6 in the year that he won the Cy Young Award. Also was an All-Star in 2005, where he was 13-7 with a 2.88 ERA. His best season that goes kind of unnoticed, 15-6 in 2004, 2.27 ERA in 27 starts. He had a whip of 1.196 and a strikeout per 9 of 9.4. I just felt like when you looked at this team all time in the pitching department, if your first thought process isn't Trevor Hoffman, it's probably Jake Peavy. So I put that as another deciding factor on why I went with him over somebody else we'll talk about probably here in the very near future. But I thought Peavy made a lot of sense, at least for me. I love what he was able to do. He was a guy, you know, and then obviously he pitched 2 seasons in Boston, pitched a couple seasons in Chicago, wrapped up his career as a member of the San Francisco Giants, came up through the Padres farm system. He felt like a San Diego guy until he was traded to the White Sox for Dexter Carter, Aaron Poranda, Clayton Richards, and Adam Russell.
Clayton Richards.
Yeah.
At least he pitched in the big leagues. I don't even know who the other people are.
Don't worry, I don't either. let's look. Adam Russell was a pitcher. He has a career 0.3 WAR, 8-3 with a 3.95 ERA over the course of his career. He pitched 1 season in Chicago, was 4-0 in 22 games, at a 5.19 ERA, whip of 1.5, and a strikeout per 9 of 7.6. He then went to San Diego in that trade, 3-1 in 15 games. The next season in San Diego, he was winless, lossless, 4.02 ERA in 12 games. And then his final season, 1-2 as a member of the Rays in 36 appearances. He finished 14 games, had a whip of 1.5, had a strikeout per 9 of 3.6.
Yeah, not very good.
That's pretty awful. Let's see, who else do we have?
Yeah, nice trade, Padres.
Aaron Pareda finished his career as a member of the Texas Rangers. So interesting statistic about this gentleman. Was traded, pitched in 2009 at the only major league career appearances that he has, okay, until 2014.
So he just out of the league for 5 years, 4 years?
So he pitched in 14 total games in 2009 between Chicago and San Diego. Had 6 games that he finished, threw 13 and a third, finished 1-0, walked 13 hitters, struck out 12, hit a guy, threw 2 wild pitches, had a WHIP of 1.725. He then pitched 1 season, 26 games in 2014 as a member of the Rangers, going 2-1 with a 5.91 ERA over 21 and a third. He had 21 strikeouts. He had 7 walks and a strikeout per 9 of 8. That's a hell of a stat.
So I don't know what the salary cap numbers were back then with Jake Peavy, but that trade was a little one-sided, I think, for everybody else.
Yeah, I would say that's probably a safe assumption for sure.
I mean, the White Sox. And honestly, Peavy's White Sox tenure wasn't that great. He had like 1 good year. So I mean,
yeah, no, it was pretty bad.
He won a Gold Glove in 2012. Wow. Pitcher Gold Gloves, I don't know how useful those are.
Did we just start renaming those the Greg Maddux Award?
I mean, pretty much.
Didn't he win like 39 of them in a row?
He won a bunch, and like Mike Mussina won a bunch. I think Max Fried won a double.
The moose is like, loose.
Yeah. Yeah, Jake Peavy, solid career.
All right, I'll let you.
I have him as well.
Oh, there it is, Jake Peavy.
Yeah, so I had Peavy as well, and then I think the fourth one's also kind of obvious, just because, well, he went in the Hall of Fame as a Padre. That's Dave Winfield. So that's
yep.
So my four was like Gwynn, Peavy, Hoffman, and Winfield. 3 of those guys are in the Hall of Fame, and all 3 of them are in as Padres. I don't think there's any other people in as Padres. So yeah, Winfield. The only other person that I think had a shot was Randy Jones, who's like an old head Padres guy. He also won a Cy Young, and they retired his numbers. So, like, he's not just, like, some scrub, but, like, he's not, like, in the grand scheme of Major League Baseball. I wouldn't say he's one of the greats. And then I was looking at his numbers when he did win the Cy Young. It's pretty insane. In 1976, he had 315 innings pitched, and he only had 93 strikeouts. So he literally like led the league in innings pitched, led the league in hits given up, but got lucky enough to have a sub 3 ERA and win 22 games. And
Jesus.
That's how he won the Cy Young. And I was like, this Randy Jones guy, like what was he doing? Just like throwing like sliders on the outside edge and just getting people to roll over ground balls to third base every time. Like I don't know much about
second and third.
Yeah, so he had a couple of really good years where he won the Cy Young in 76, was second in 75, but he wasn't like a very electric pitcher. He was just, I guess he just back then, I don't know. What you would say now is that he just got lucky. Like, I don't understand, but yeah, we're foregoing Randy Jones and we're going Dave Winfield because Dave Winfield, yeah, in the Hall of Fame as a Padre, in the Hall of Fame in general, which is pretty solid.
Yeah.
He played 8 years in San Diego before going to the Yankees, and he was arguably their best player, was an all-star for them 4 times, top 10 MVP votes most of those years. Yeah, I don't see how you go against Dave Winfield in this spot. Not like he
Dave Winfield.
He was a world beater.
I did not go against Mr. Winfield. His eight seasons in San Diego, he hit .284 with a .357 on base percentage. He had 1,134 hits as a member of the Padres. He had 179 doubles, 39 triples, 154 round trips, 626 RBIs, a four-time All-Star, a third-place MVP finish, two gold gloves, and eclipsed a WAR of 32 as a member of the Padres.
Yeah, so pretty solid. Wasn't like a world beater by any means, but he was hitting 20 home runs and getting 20 stolen bases and hitting 300 almost every year and OPSing around 800 to 900 mostly.
I also had Winfield as the final member of my Mount Rushmore. I was contemplating going back and forth between him and a certain gentleman by the name of Adrian Gonzalez.
Yeah, I looked at him too.
He's someone that I really stuck on for a little while before going with Winfield, and it was primarily because of the Hall of Fame inductions and things like that. Gonzalez's stat line as a member of the Padres in five seasons, he played 799 games. He had 501 RBIs, 161 home runs. He had a career batting average of .288 as a Padre, an on-base percentage of .374. Finished fourth in the MVP vote in 2010. Had three other top 20 finishes. Was a four-time All-Star as a member of the Padres. I really liked Adrian Gonzalez. I liked him whenever he played in Boston for the one season and a half we had him before we traded him to the Dodgers in the salary dump situation. He was the only other one that I actually thought about. I know Ken Caminiti was a name that we kind of joked about. I don't think Ken's tenure as a member of the Padres was long enough to have actual consideration, especially with the three guys that were kind of slam dunks.
Yeah, I agree with that. Same with Adrian Gonzalez. Just he was only there for a few years. Mm-hmm. Tough to pick him.
Well, it's also tough to pick him because he played longer as a member of the Dodgers than he did as a member of the Padres.
Yeah, there you go.
And he was also like a piece of that Padres team. He wasn't the whole team. Brian Giles was still there. They had – who the hell else was part of that?
Khalil Green.
Oh, Khalil Green. I forgot about him.
Man, he was supposed to be so good.
The 2010 team, that offense had – Yorvit Torrealba, Adrian Gonzalez, David Eckstein, Miguel Tejada, Tony Gwynn Jr. was playing center field. Will Venable there. Clayton Richards went 14-9. John Garland 14-12. Matt Latos 14-10. Heath Bell had 47 saves in 67 appearances. That was the team that Adrian finished fourth in the MVP vote. So there was a lot of times where he didn't have to go really out there and like be the guy. So I think that kind of played a role in my thought processes as well.
Yeah. Like he was definitely a monster for those few years, but yeah, just not
long enough
the franchise or anything like that.
Correct.
Like, without looking up Padres career stats, when I was like, who's the face of the franchise for the Padres? I don't think of him right away. I think of these other four guys first by far.
Yeah, I would agree with that. So yeah, I would agree.
That's my reasoning on that one. Same with Randy Jones. Like, his number's retired, which is kind of ridiculous, but I don't think of Randy Jones when I think of the Padres.
God, I hate the University of Nevada.
Yeah, they're blowing it.
No, they blew it. It's over.
It's over? Oh, yeah, I had the money line. What the?
I did too. And they were up by like 14 at one point in that game.
Oh my goodness. They were up by 9.5. And that had to be my bracket.
Yeah, that's gross.
Man.
Sorry, as you guys are listening to this, we are on Thursday, March 21st, first day of the NCAA tournament, and we're sitting here just scratching our head about how a team at one point was up by 14 points with 15:22 left in the game. Found a way to squander an entire
yeah, my phone of a lead. My phone's blowing up right now, just like, what, WTF Nevada? Pretty much had them locked in as a win. That's a scam.
15. Oh, they're up 15 with 10 minutes left.
Jeez.
They went. I want to see when their last
play. I bet on them money line like early.
Okay, so they made a layup with 58 seconds left to take the lead back at 60-59. Okay. When Dayton started their run, it was 58-39 with 7:19 left. Nevada did not score again until that layup with 58 seconds left. They went over 6.5 minutes without a fucking point. Good fucking Christ.
Hate it. Everybody, dude, like everybody was on Nevada. It's so absurd.
Free throw, three-pointer, layup, two free throws, back-to-back threes. Dunk and one, then he makes the free throw. Then Nevada makes the layup to take the lead back. And then they fucking turn the ball over.
Vomit-inducing, yeah. For sure.
100%. All right, let's talk about who we think could take over a spot on this Mount Rushmore. Who in the future has a fighting chance to crack this granite stone?
I guess Tatis.
I mean, I think he's number one.
Yeah. Machado, if he plays there long enough.
I think if Machado retires there, he has a shot.
Yeah, because he would be there by like, or for like 10 years at that point, right?
So Dave Winfield has had a 32 WAR as a member of the Padres. Manny Machado, so far as a member of the Padres, has accumulated a WAR of, I believe it said 20 point something. So he's already kind of closing in on Winfield for WAR. And I feel that if he, so as a Padre, his WAR is 20.3. So he's only an 8 WAR away from tying Dave Winfield.
Yeah. Definitely.
I mean, I would say Tatis, I would say Machado, and I would roundabout say, depending on, you know, I know he just made his major league debut, and the likelihood that he stays there for the duration of his career might be in question. But Jackson Merrill, the center fielder,
he's up there. You know who is also another possibility, and
Ha-Sung Kim.
Yeah. Just because of his defense, like, won a Gold Glove last year. Not the greatest offensive player, but who knows what he could blossom into. He's only 25 years old still, which is kind of rare for these Asian players. Like, usually they come over when they're, like, 30, 31 years old. But he came over a couple years ago, and he's already been there for, like, 4 years. So he's another person I would think about. It's tough to say what Juan Soto would have done, but he's gone. And same with Blake Snell.
You're not wrong there.
Yeah. But yeah, Jackson Merrill has a lot of promise. He's supposed to be pretty good. See what he does.
All right. Let's see here.
Who else do they even have on their team right now? Oh, Cronenworth. Like Cronenworth, he's been pretty up and down. But yes. I know the fans love Cronenworth. How could you not with that name?
It's the Cronen Zone.
Exactly. He's already 30 years old. He's had like one good year, really. Nothing special, but I know he's like a fan favorite.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think he's going to pan out to be someone that's considered
Mount Rushmore. I think he'll be a San Diegoan Mount Rushmore, but not a baseball Mount Rushmore. Like, the fans of San Diego will always give him more love than the baseball media will.
Reminds me of someone like Brian Giles, probably.
Yeah, he gives me the Brian Giles, the, I know a lot of Diamondbacks fans really loved them, some Shea Hillenbrand.
Yep.
So whenever you can tug on the heartstrings of the fans, you kind of have to go after it. Anything on the Padres before we wrap this up?
I don't know. What kind of other prospects are you thinking they have? I know they traded, a whole lot for Soto, CJ Abrams, Mackenzie Gore. They traded
The entire Washington Nationals starting lineup for this year?
Yeah, pretty much. I know they traded Xavier Edwards to the Marlins. It's like, I don't know what they have up and coming aside from Jackson Merrill. I can't really think of, I don't know who they're as far as pitching staff goes either.
Hold on, let me
I'm just like not well versed on the Padres these days. But I'm looking at their current I'm looking at the current roster.
Right now, according to it's Ethan Salas, the catcher. His ETA is beginning of next year. Jackson Merrill's already on the roster. Left-handed pitcher Robbie Snelling, Dylan Lesko, Leodelis,
Devirius. Bogarts is really good. It's just he also had a down year, and he's like on the decline, I feel like.
I'm interested to see what Bogarts does playing second base.
Yeah, I mean, their lineup isn't too bad. Campusano.
Their lineup will be Campusano's, I think, is just a stopgap until top prospect Evan Salas is ready.
Yeah, Salas.
I think that's what Campusano.
They have Darvish, too. Darvish and Musgrove, pretty solid top two in that rotation.
Another point of conversation was I said that Yamamoto could work through his problems and the Dodgers still be super competitive this year. Whereas if Musgrove does what he did today and gets hit around by teams, the Padres will not be competitive.
I agree. He's strung together like quite a few good years in a row though. So, since he was with Pittsburgh, even.
Exactly. Anything else?
All I got, man. I think when it's all said and done, I think we're still going to have Gwynn, Winfield, Hoffman, and then it's just whoever wants to replace Jake Peavy if they want to play for more than 10 years of the Padres.
Yeah, I would say that's probably the right thought process. I would say that Gwynn and Hoffman are probably the two locks.
Yeah, 100%.
No matter what. I mean, if Tatis and Machado both go on to have huge careers as Padres, maybe one of them will catch Winfield, the other one catches Jake Peavy.
Yeah, I agree with that.
All right, you want to plug anything before we leave?
No plugs. You can plug if you wish.
You can listen to the other shows here on the Huddle Up feed, including the N1 basketball show with Ernest EJ Christian, The Pitch with Matthew Muheisen, Huddle Up Proper, which is the football show on this feed. We recorded an episode Tuesday. It dropped. It is how Go Home Free Agency You're Drunk, NFL Free Agency Recap. You can go over to Big Jim's Twitter page, @ Big Jim Sports. Linktree there will take you to the store to buy any of the Huddle Up merchandise that you want. Over on our TeePublic store. Until next week, where we will join you with the San Francisco Giants.
Gigantes. Jason and Mike,
Los Gigantes. For Jay, I'm Mike. We'll see you next week right here on the mountains.